You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the Podcast Network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, May 11th, 2011. This is episode 183, Security and Privacy and Fair Use. Oh my. Hello again, everybody. This is Martin Spriggs, one of your hosts on the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology and ministry and where those two meet. And the person that helps me do that is Sally Draper. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. Happy to join you here on episode 183. Mm-hmm. Those numbers are just flying by.
They're getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah. We'll have to make some serious plans for a 200th celebration.
200, yes. Who would have thunk it?
I don't know.
And it's not anyway. Like we're having this show every day. It's once a week. So that's essentially about 180 or so weeks that we've been at this. And hopefully, I don't even listen to the earlier episodes at this point. It's probably too depressing. Hopefully we've gotten much better than the first episodes. Maybe some of our listeners could let us know how we're doing. But we do have a good time, and no shortage of topics either. And maybe one of the easiest shows that we have to plan is essentially this one, where we take a book, like the one we're going to be reviewing or finishing reviewing today, Leading 21st Century Schools, and we read through it and we comment chapter by chapter on relevant topics that we think maybe our listeners might enjoy listening to and might be able to make use of. And this particular book is probably more focused on the educators out there, but I think there's probably application across the board. And I think especially for the topic of today, which is the last two chapters of the book, chapters 8 and 9, one of them dealing with essentially privacy, copyright, keeping things safe for those people using these tools of technology.
Yeah, really interesting topic, and especially appropriate for our school settings where we have children that we are concerned about their safety and privacy, and certainly something we can't ignore, especially once you introduce the world to your school via that internet channel. And so very important topic. We are happy to have Greg Boggs from the Nebraska area, someone who's mm-hmm. been a technology leader in the Nebraska district for quite some time, join us and share some of his knowledge on privacy and filtering and that kind of thing. So we'll be bringing you that interview later in the show.
Yeah, and I appreciated Greg's candid comments too, because they come from a person who's kind of lived this and has worked with a bunch of different schools in that area and has a lot of experience to bring to the table, and firsthand experience, not just some of the experiences like you and I have, Sally, where we read a book or we read something online and we share it. There are people who live and breathe this stuff every single day, and Greg was good enough to share that with us. So
very good. So maybe we should jump right in. Again, we're covering chapters 8 and 9 today, so we're wrapping up this book selection. We started it back in September, I believe, with an mm-hmm. interview with the author. One of the authors, Lynn Shrum, joined us back Great. Then. And you can actually look in our show notes if you're interested and kind of go back to the beginning and go through the entire book with us if you want to go dig through the archives a little bit. But for today, we're looking at chapter 8, which is titled Privacy, Permission, and Protection. Mm-hmm. Looking at the concept of privacy, you know, it's a double-edged sword. You mm-hmm. certainly want to share the work and take advantage of comments and the worldwide exposure that you can get by putting your students' work online and things like
right.
that. You want to give them access to all these great Web 2.0 tools, teaching them to be effective and smart digital citizens as they move forward in this 21st century skill set that they're developing and everything. But you have to put appropriate filtering and things in place. And mm-hmm. One that we've recommended in the past, Martin, is OpenDNS,
right.
which is actually a domain name server filtering process. Mm-hmm. And so you point to their domain name server instead of the one through your internet service provider, basically. Mm-hmm.
Usually the one through your internet service provider is just a basic one, just serving up and translating what you're looking for into the IP addresses. That's what a domain name server does. It translates the language, you know, the English language into the internet language.
Numbers and dots. And
right. So when you type in www.wellstech.wells.net, the computers that serve that up really have IP addresses, which are a number of digits connected together, and it does that translation. But what OpenDNS does is it sits in the middle there and does a little bit more. So it does some content filtering and can protect those people that are actually typing in those addresses from either accidentally or intentionally going to sites that you may not want them to go to, whether they be, you know, gambling or shopping sites or gaming sites or lottery sites or pornographic sites or whatever. It filters that stuff out and does a pretty good job. But there are other filtering tools too. And as you mentioned, Sally, privacy is a double-edged sword, so to speak, because you obviously want to protect the children from surfing to areas where certainly the teachers or their parents wouldn't want them to go to. But all the other side of that is protecting others from coming into the network and potentially either stealing information or presenting information to the kids through many different tools, whether it be email or whatever viruses that you wouldn't want them confronted with either. And when you listen to the Greg Boggs interview, he talks about a couple of those as well. So that's the whole side of filtering, and every school really needs to pay attention to that. There shouldn't be anybody with a wide open network if you have children on computers that are connected to the internet.
And excuse me, I think one thing that's really important is that we invest in educating our students. You know, we teach them about driver education, and we teach them a variety of skill sets that they need in this world. And I think they need technology education. They need digital citizenship skills. Mm-hmm. So, and one of the main things we drive home with the younger students is to tell a trusted adult if they're right. uncomfortable with anything that they experience on the web.
Sure. So. And kind of the continuum here that I see in, at least in the educational space, is obviously the younger the child, the more the filtering, you know, more of the content filtering should be done. But as they progress, and maybe as they move into their high school years, that should become a little less restrictive, and the conversations with them should increase about, you know, good computing habits, you know, obviously the Christian values that should be applied. And maybe you move from content filtering to more of accountability software, and we've talked about some of those in the past, things like Covenant Eyes, where you are entering into kind of a relationship of trust with somebody that you work with. Maybe it's a parent, maybe it's a, you know, friend, maybe it's somebody else that they get a report or can look at reports of your surfing habits, and in that way there's an accountability partner. So I think it's as kids progress, then obviously you need to continually think about what is the best way to get them to a point. Obviously at some point they're going to be on their own, and obviously you want them to be in a place where, you know, they understand how to act as a Christian, you know, on the internet.
That's right. Our goal is that discerning heart,
right.
Because they are going to have to make those decisions for themselves. I just heard a talk by Dr. Carla Melendi, who's one of the MLC professors, mm-hmm. and she spoke about, you know, giving them those skills,
yep.
and trusting them with those skills and everything. I think that's a real important thing that we need to do.
Yep. Carla's great. Then we moved on. There's a section in there about acceptable use policies, and that is also something that every organization should have. How do you use the technology that is given to you or made accessible to you in your organization? And this applies to students, but it also applies to teachers, pastors, anybody using the resources that are made available by the organization.
And they have a really good chart. It's on page 148 for those that are following along in the book, with some guidelines for your acceptable use policy. And I also found some examples on the web, so we can share some links of some sample acceptable use policies. This is probably one of those things that you have covered in your school handbook. Maybe you have the students and the parents sign it at the beginning of the school year, so they know what the rules are, and mm-hmm. you know what the consequences are if they violate those rules in terms of technology usage in the school.
Right, and yeah, they go. There's a list of nine there on that page of things that you should really make sure your what they call the AUP, the acceptable use policy, has clear language, detailed standards of behavior, enforcement guidelines, internet policy statement, outline or list of acceptable versus non-acceptable uses, consent forms, and so on and so forth. So good stuff there. I think they did a nice job of really kind of distilling that down to the essential elements. And again, if you don't have one, there's plenty of examples online. You just need to do a search, and you'll find just a ton of them out there.
Maybe this is kind of an opportunity. We work on our digital citizenship with our students, but mm-hmm. actually putting it in writing in front of the parents and requiring their signature is an opportunity to make them more aware of these issues as mm-hmm. well. So
right.
there's some educating going on, even with that acceptable use policy.
Yep. The next section or topic that they cover in Chapter 8 there is copyright. And we're not going to spend a lot of time here because we have spent a number of shows talking about copyright. It seems to come up almost every time we talk about content on the internet and the whole concept of fair use. There's a great chart in the book on what fair use is and isn't. And there's all kinds of online resources. There's a Wikipedia article, of course. The U.S. Copyright Office has an article on fair use. And I think a while back we shared a YouTube video, kind of a fair, what they call a fair use tale, which is just a mashup of different kinds of Disney, I think it's Disney clips, right? Where they map them together to kind of tell the story of fair use. And it in and of itself is an example of fair use, as they're taking obviously copyrighted material but using it properly under the provisions that are available under fair use.
Wrapping up this chapter, then, the last major topic is evaluating websites. Another area that we need to give our students some skills evaluating websites. Martin, you and I both reminisced about seeing David Warlick speak mm-hmm. several years ago at an EduTech conference, and he showed a really great, I think it was a Martin Luther King website, mm-hmm. and it looked really, you know, shiny and glossy and well done, well professionally laid out.
A useful educational resource, yes.
But when he did a little digging to see the source of the website, it turned out it was put together by some white supremacist organization.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, things aren't always as they appear on the web, believe it or not. And you need to teach people some critical evaluation skills. And to that extent, we found a really great link from Kathy Shirock. She has a guide for educators for surveying websites and mm-hmm. evaluating them. So I want to share that link in the show notes. And also, again, referencing the book, there's a really good chart. It's table 8.2 on page 154 of the book, where they look at evaluating web pages mm-hmm. and understanding how good it is, how well the site is put together, and what the source of the data is.
Yep. This is really an important topic, I think, in education today, where I think some teachers have taken the approach that, well, you can't use any online resources. And so it's all got to come from a book, a library book or an article or a traditional magazine, whatever. And I think that's the wrong approach today, because a lot of the stuff that is of use is only now online. And there are many credible online resources. So teaching your kids how to evaluate the credibility of an online resource is, I think, really important, as well as the teacher getting smarter on what to look for. And some of these resources that we have here in the show notes will really help you do that.
So now we should probably move on to Chapter 9, which is titled Important Considerations for 21st Century Leaders. So this is kind of the tie-it-all-together chapter, right. The end of the book, Hard Questions and Answers. It starts off with an interesting quote. It says, "Without a well-articulated and supported vision of technology integration by teachers and administrators, adding new technologies to the school and classroom will have a minimal effect on changing teachers' instructional practice and their technology use with students." Mm-hmm. So in other words, just doing technology for the sake of doing technology isn't going to get you anywhere. Right. You really need a vision why it is that you're doing these things and what your goals or outcomes are expected to be. And I think this chapter kind of helps you take a good look at that.
Mm-hmm. And they've kind of divvied it up into some major sections. One of them, of course, is online learning. And again, this is a growing area within almost every level of education. I've talked with many people across the Senate who are interested in doing more of this, especially on the high school and the college level, and even our seminary is making online courses available. And it just makes a lot of sense. It saves money, and if it's done right, it can be just as effective as face-to-face. So there's a whole section there on that. And also homeschooling, I think, is mentioned there too, which is a real blessing. Online learning is a real blessing to anybody doing homeschooling, of course.
They also talk about one-to-one computing, right. The whole one laptop
big
per child
topic.
Initiative.
Yep.
And, you know, today we talk more and more about putting iPads or iPod devices in children's hands so that they have the technology right there at their fingertips.
And, yep.
One of our favorite sites for that, give a shout out to our good friend, Tony Vincent. Tony does the website Learning in Hand. And if you're at all interested in those handheld devices, this is the galleria mm-hmm. of resources that you want to go and check out, that Learning in Hand website. He's got it all put together there.
Yeah, as I recall, one of your picks of the week at some point in the past.
At some
right?
point it was. A really great pick.
It was, there. Yes. Of course, any book like this would not be a book about technology and education without talking about the digital divide. Sally, what's the digital divide?
Well, it's the difference between the haves and the have-nots.
Right.
How many of the students that you face in your classroom have internet access at home? Mm-hmm. Probably more and more do, but potentially there are some that do not.
It still exists, right.
How many have these handheld devices that they have access to or you know, their own laptops or whatever? I know that there are students in our school that do, but there are some that do not. And so how do you keep everybody on a level playing field and not adversely
put anybody at a disadvantage just because they don't have that technology.
That's the word right. I was looking for. Mm-hmm. So there's a good Wikipedia article on this topic as well, and some Edutopia resources about the digital divide as well. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, Martin, you know, I'd love to get feedback from our Wells teachers as to how much of that they're seeing in their classrooms. And our church is a pretty rural congregation, and most everyone has email connections to the church mm-hmm. now and the school. So we can communicate via email without a problem. And I think I'd venture a guess that all our students have internet access at home. I'm not 100% sure of that, but I believe most all of them do.
Mm-hmm. So. Certainly a number that's only going up, and because of that, we need to prepare for that and also to take advantage of that. When you and I were growing up, Sally, it was to the library or you didn't get it. It was or if you had a set of encyclopedias and if they were current, then you had a great resource. But now you've got all that and it's constantly changing and up to date. So what a blessing.
For sure.
And
one thing you can take advantage of is some of the free and repurposed things that are available for schools. Mm-hmm. So if you do have limited budgetary resources or you know, kind of a more rural congregation or whatever it might be, there's a lot of free software. There are companies that exist to give schools old equipment that's being repurposed from businesses or whatever. And there's certainly a lot of grants available as well to help you with your technology usage.
Yeah, although this is a very short section in here, it's probably a very big topic for many schools. Is, you know, technology does cost something. So how do you make a little go a long way, and open source and repurposed or reconditioned old equipment, and certainly the whole grant space is an area that schools are going to want to pay attention to and spend the time to get all the facts together and put those things together, so that you will benefit as a result.
So again, just kind of tying it all together, putting it in perspective, this particular book was specifically geared at school administrators, mm-hmm. and how they as leaders need to be the ones that are bringing this technology change into their school settings. And she ends with that it's also necessary for each administrator to model, support, and lead his or her school or district into the 21st century. Our students are already there, and many of the educators are also living and working in this new environment. So it's time for the administrators to really kind of take up the torch and run with it in terms of having that vision of how they want their schools to function in this new digital age.
Yep. All right. Well, that was a great pick of a book, Sally. I appreciate you finding that for us, and well worth the effort to go through it. Again, that's Leading 21st Century Schools, subtitled Harnessing Technology for Engagement and Achievement, Lynn Shrum and Barbara Levin. Shall we move forward?
Move right into that interview with Greg Box.
Yeah, that's a great, great segue, because Greg talks a lot about his work with schools and their concern for privacy and making sure that good things happen in that educational institution. So let's listen to Greg Box. This morning we welcome Greg Boggs from Nebraska, joining us to talk a little bit about security and how that can hopefully help some of our elementary schools and high schools. And Greg, that is an area that you spend a lot of time with. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning, Martin.
Thank you very much for joining us. Appreciate it. Greg, we go back a little ways. You serve on the Synod's Technology Advisory Committee, and we've had other conversations about things like live streaming. And in fact, I believe it was Nebraska Lutheran who helped us with our first foray into streaming when we just got started with I think that was our first test with one of our Synod conventions. Maybe it must have been like 6 years ago now.
Yes, Nebraska Lutheran started back actually 7 years ago in the streaming that basically came out of a want or a need to try and connect our families at Nebraska Lutheran High School to the rest of the nation, so that being a dorm school, parents could participate in the sports, but that quickly turned into worship broadcast. The members of the district saw that.
Yep. And I remember we had, because of the infrastructure there, and back in the day, I think we could only take maybe 60 or 70 people at a time, and now we have events where we have over 1,000, so the technology has advanced on all sides. So maybe before we go much further, we should allow you, Greg, to tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, where you serve and what your business is and your activities in your church there in Nebraska.
Certainly. Well, basically a little bit about myself. Grew up in Southern California and have been a Wells member all my life. So I've been in basically knowledge of two of our districts, the California, Arizona, and now the Nebraska district. I have had the privilege of serving Nebraska Lutheran High School and St. Mark Lutheran Church in Lincoln, Nebraska. And being a person who has been most of his life involved in technology as computers have come about, have had the privilege to serve along that line. And as we talked earlier, within the streaming media and network support to both the congregation locally and the high school, and then also have the privilege of serving as the chairman of the Nebraska District Technology Committee, helping the district and the congregations within the district in technology, whether it's audio, sound, but a lot of network and computer-related mm-hmm. questions.
And to my knowledge, I think your district was one of the first that actually had a technology committee. In fact, some still do not. So you were a pioneer in that regard. And one of the reasons that I wanted to have you on the show was because of your work specifically with privacy concerns, because obviously that is something that is front of mind for a lot of people, and especially in our schools, as we've got children, you know, sitting in front of computers that have access to the outside world via the internet. That is obviously a concern, and as we're talking on the show today more about how do we protect them. And so as you work with the schools and churches in your area, and I know that you do that a lot, what do you perceive their privacy concerns as being?
Well, as far as the school the churches, both a lot of privacy concerns in there, in the elementary and the high school. With the connections to the internet, over the years we've gone from just a dial-up connection to a permanent connection, thus leaving the local network on a 24/7 connection to the world. Mm-hmm. And the privacy concerns that came to me were, what are our children doing? Certainly our teachers, not to diminish what they do due diligence within the labs, but they can't be every place all the time. So the need for software or some type of gateway or front end in that connection, whether it be to the church or the high school, needed to be put in place. And so it was back for me in 2001 at Nebraska Lutheran High School where we looked for a solution. Firewall in those years was becoming bigger and more powerful, and a way of knowing who went where and at what time. And then screening became an important issue as far as what are the students allowed to access, what is the faculty allowed to access, and trying to keep it user-friendly and keep information that could be harmful to the network from either hack attacks and malware from coming into the network, or certainly thwarting that effort.
Now, Greg, when you say user-friendly for the administrator or for the end users, the teachers, the students, or both?
I think that's goes both ways. Certainly if you have what I see in the parishes and see in the high schools is that we sometimes have the blessing of a very a person who is a key person in technology, and sometimes we don't. So it has to be a software or a device that can be easily controlled by the teaching staff or the administrator. And then, yes, the next part of that is to the end user. If students can't gain access easily to where they need to do, we hamper their ability to learn if we're blocking pages. So we have to have software in place that is easy to manage by the administrator and not blocking what the students need to go to.
So do you find that the people that you're working with on the school levels are doing double duty, essentially? They're basically teachers. They're not technologists, but they have technology responsibilities. Or do you ever see people just dedicated to managing the technology in on a particular campus?
I think I can speak on that in this area, but they're teachers first and technologists second.
Right.
Maybe some of our larger schools certainly have the ability to have a person full-time on staff. I think we've talked over the years on the committees. One of one of the situations within the churches and within the schools is the volunteer work and so forth that's done out there, and certainly not to demean any of the volunteer work, because I'm sure people's hearts, I know people's hearts are in the right place, but it's always having that resource there as people move and come and go to help the kingdom out there.
Right.
Going back to the technologist, things have to be easy for them.
Mm-hmm. So this is Sally Draper. I'm kind of eavesdropping here. I wanted to jump in with a question of my own, kind of expanding the scope beyond privacy concerns. Are there other challenges that you have dealt with in your experience that schools and churches are struggling with as they manage technology?
Yeah, there are beyond the internet connection, the other technology that I see is some wireless technology or Wi-Fi used in the churches and schools and security. All our schools and churches are responsible for their internet connection to the public internet, and sometimes there isn't due diligence to securing those networks. I think a lot of things get thrown into technology there, their audio, video, their phone system. So it all becomes, for me, over the years, has been to make a sound and secure network that works easily when I work with the different churches and schools.
Well, you hit the nail on the head with a lot of those. I can vouch for that from the technology support standpoint. People just really have high expectations these days that you're going to have Wi-Fi and you're going to have this telephone system in place that's miraculously connecting everyone and having the number of lines you need. And all of that takes a lot of work and a lot of knowledge. So I can definitely see the challenges that would arise with those kind of things. Do you have recommended solutions, maybe starting with the whole privacy side and safe computing? Are there recommendations you have for us?
Well, for safe computing or connecting to the network, certainly a firewall device. There's many firewall devices that are on the market out there. One that we have used for many years at Nebraska Lutheran High School and several of the LESs in the area has been a product by Smoothwall. It was first a firewall and then became a block or a
filter, right?
And so that has worked well for us, and they were one of the first to bring a product to market, the School Guardian, that they brought that was specifically for the education in the school market.
And what differentiates that from, you know, maybe a commercial or a business grade product? Is it specific to do they have specific filters that allow the, you know, the administrator to apply in certain situations, or by grade level, or what's kind of the difference there?
It's really more a pricing incentive is what they really did. The difference between commercial and education, the filtering is very similar. They've just done a few subtle changes to make it for the school with the block lists and so forth more conform to the education market.
Mm-hmm. So a product like that comes, that's an appliance, or is that a software product, an application that gets installed on a server? How does that get set up, Greg?
Right now, the School Guardian is a software product that is installed on a PC platform with more than one network card. Eventually, it will come out in the appliance side of the industry.
Mm-hmm. So you have to have multiple network cards. So one network card takes the feed from the internet. That's your connection to the outside world. And then the other network card or cards essentially feed your LAN, your inside network, correct?
Correct. You can have more than the two, as you said. You could have a Wi-Fi network and a wired network and so forth, depending how you want to secure and protect. So it gives you a lot of versatility to know what's happening within your network. And I think that's important for all our schools and churches, because as they are buying connections to the network, that's a finite resource that they have. And without having some type of gateway here, they really don't know what the usage is. And I think it's a common problem I hear in the network is, hey, the network's slow. It's not working right. And then the solution becomes a bigger pipe or more bandwidth, when in essence that may be able to be looked at through the firewall by the logs and see what the problem truly is. And spending more money on the network connection to the internet may not be the solution or the answer.
So in essence, with these kinds of products, you could shape the traffic so that if you're seeing that there's a large amount of, let's say, video data or things, different things that you can observe on the network, and throttling that maybe back a little bit so that other areas of the network could be freed up. Is that really what you're saying?
Yeah, that's exactly. The traffic can be freed up. It can be shaped by time of day and so forth to make sure that the resource is being correctly used.
So it could, what I'm taking away from this kind of product and this kind of an approach is that you could, in essence, save the cost of whatever the product is just in and maybe not having to upgrade your network, because you may have sufficient bandwidth. You just need to segment it properly.
Absolutely. Yes.
How are these products priced, Greg? Is it by student? Is it by user? Is it by desktop? How are these normally priced? And what could a medium to small, let's say, elementary school expect to have to pay to maintain something like this?
Well, currently the product is priced as a firewall and then a per-seat license or a annual filter license. The average cost going into a school for machine and software has been roughly right now about $2,000 on a, let's say, a 50-student LES. That's
a one-time cost, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then the renewal, which there is an annual renewal, of course, for the active block list and filters that are coming. I would look at that about $500 a year in the block list. And I know that there's a lot of free that we can do out there without getting technical. I think it comes back to, do you have the person on the staff that can tune the free filters out to be what they need to be for the organization?
What kind of time are you seeing administrators needing to spend in securing the network once it's set up, let's say?
Once it's set up, I see maybe a couple hours a week just looking at the logs to see what's going on, see where the traffic's going. But fairly automatic in the updates that are coming from the services. So once set up, fairly limited intervention by the administrator on site.
Which fits well with those teachers that are out there trying to wear these multiple hats.
Right.
Sounds like a really good solution.
Absolutely.
Maybe one last question then, and that is on, you mentioned, you briefly touched on it, but this takes it maybe a little bit further, mobile computing. We see a lot of schools obviously interested in wireless networks, but we're also seeing some interest in small devices in the hands of the students, whether they be tablets or iPod touches or whatever they are. Let's relate that maybe to privacy concerns there. We've heard a lot in the news lately about tracking, people being able to track locations of these mobile devices. What as you think about that particular space, and that's going to only continue to grow, any privacy concerns there?
Well, privacy and security does come into play with that. I think one of the things that our schools and churches need to realize is that when we go to leasing the laptops and giving them to the students, that we've opened ourselves to a liability issue of putting a device in the student's hand that is property of the school. And what they do and how they use that may come back on the school. That's been a big concern of ours as we've looked at the mobile computing lab and making sure that there's software, viable product, number one, that keeps our acceptable use policies in our schools on that mobile computing as it's going home and make sure it's used within the standards that we've set. Mm-hmm. Security or privacy, there are some concerns out there. As far as tracking, again, it comes down to being able to see who, what, where, and when has access to the device. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that could be a show within itself.
Mm-hmm. So if a student is given a laptop, so you've got a one laptop per child kind of program going, are there things that you can do to the laptop, maybe a personal firewall or personal content filter that could be applied to that machine that could protect it and the student using it?
Absolutely. And you do want that because as the student goes out on the public networks, you want that mobile firewall on that machine to see what it's going out and pulling in, because eventually that network's going to come to the home school and attach to that network. So it is an opening to a security threat of the home network when mm-hmm. it comes back. Mm-hmm. And in answer to your question, yes, there is software that we put on the mobile computing that again, checks with the database at the home base to make sure that the machine is compliant to the acceptable use policy put in place by the organization.
Very good. Sally, you have anything else?
No, I just it's kind of overwhelming. You know, we spend a lot of time talking about that one laptop per child kind of concept and one-to-one computing, and it just opens up a whole new possibility to what they're connecting with and bringing back to your network. And mm-hmm. so great thoughts that you shared there.
Yeah, I think privacy should be top of mind and certainly something that's considered in any kind of solution rollout, whether it be a computer lab or a computer cart, mobile devices, you know, take-home devices, whatever they are. That's always a concern. So, Greg, thank you for taking the time. Really appreciate you sharing your thoughts with us today.
Thank you for having me in this morning.
Thanks again to Greg. You can tell just from listening to him that he has a wealth of experience and really understands what the hot buttons are and the important points to cover, you know, when dealing with securing a school network and making sure that the educational experience for the kids is a safe one.
And we'll be sure to include a link to that Smoothwall website that Greg mentioned mm-hmm. for their education filtering software.
Yep. Let's move on to ministry resources.
Yeah, we have a lot to share here. First up, I read a recent blog post from the Glow Bible that said that YouVersion has mm-hmm. now been integrated into Glow. So if you're used to making Bible notes in your YouVersion account, those will all be a part of your Glow Bible account. At this point, they kind of sucked all that in
yep.
there, and it seems like it's a pretty smoothless integration. So that's exciting news.
I was really excited to see that because I use both products, and I had wished a couple times that, boy, this would be nice if they integrated somehow. And that makes sense because YouVersion has a good infrastructure for it. They have the online resources, and you can take it with you on your portable devices as well. And just a nice compliment there. So kudos to those guys for hooking up.
Very good. And also worth mentioning again in Ministry Resources that Internet Evangelism Day Com website that we've talked about before. We've interviewed Tony Whitaker from that website. Mm-hmm. This Sunday is actually the designated Internet Evangelism Day Sunday, where they're encouraging everyone to seize the moment, you know, share their faith via the web, basically. Mm-hmm. And one particular page that they've put together to support you in that effort is a free ebook download page, and you can get to it at ieday.net/eb for ebook. Mm-hmm. And on that page, what you're going to find is links to a variety of ebooks, some of which will only be free on Sunday, May 15th. So that's why I wanted you to pay particular attention this coming Sunday. They have netcasters using the internet to make fishers of men, and a social networking mystery book title, which will be only available on Sunday, May 15th.
So, interesting.
Yeah, I think you could potentially get some good reading. Maybe fill up your Kindle or your iPod or whatever it is that you do your reading on, and get some good ebooks to spark your internet outreach efforts.
Mm-hmm. And one other ministry resource that we should throw in here, and we've mentioned this, I think, in the past, that we do have a Android app for Wells, and I built it using a tool called App Maker, and I relaunched it last weekend, I guess it was. So if you search the Android marketplace for Wells Online, you'll see the new app out there. If you've got the old one, I think this is much better than that. So take a look at that. It's free, of course. You can download it, and what you can do with it is certainly listen to this podcast, but you can listen to all the podcasts that we produce, whether it be Through the Bible in 3 Years, the daily devotional reading, the military devotions, this podcast. You can watch the videos that we post online, whether they be Wells Connection or any other videos that we publish. You can do reading of the Bible, our devotional readings, either one, and also our Q&A, which is very popular, so you can stay up to date on the questions that are being asked on the Wells.net website and the wonderful answers that are provided by our seminary profs. So if you search for Wells Online in the Amazon Android marketplace, you should be able to find that app. Let us know what you think, too.
You can also check out our links in our show notes. We'll have a link to it directly from our show notes this week.
Perfect. News and tech, Sally.
Well, we have lots of news and tech to share as well. One fun story that I wanted to point people to, just to take a quick look at the future, is about a paper phone. This was a CNET news story that I just thought was too weird to believe. But basically, they've made a flexible circuit board, and you can interact with a visual, it's not a touch screen, but you can interact with this telephone, this smart looking phone, by bending this board. You'll have to watch the video to get the gist of it. But I just like to look at the future a little bit and see the things that are being developed and kind of imagine how that's going to affect us as that type of technology evolves and develops more. So I thought that one was a fun one to share.
And speaking of privacy and security again, there was some bad news in the industry, at least bad news as far as my security approach is concerned, and that's that LastPass, which is a password manager that I use, and I think it's been a pick of the week of mine in the past, was breached. They didn't say the extent of the breach. It wasn't, I don't think, as bad as Sony had, where they lost, you know, millions, I think, of credit card numbers. There may have been a LastPass breach. So if you use LastPass, I would still encourage you to continue using that. In fact, they say, you know, the best place to be, the best tools to use are those that have had recent breaches, because now they're doubling their security. But you may want to go in and change your master password. The way LastPass works is you have one master password, and then it autofills all your other passwords. So one rule of thumb that I always have, though, is I never put my financial institution username and passwords in there. So even if LastPass were breached and they had all my stuff, they could get it, my email stuff and my all my other accounts for Twitter or whatever, Facebook, they could not get into my banking software and write themselves a check. So That's just a little tip there. But if you do use LastPass, make sure you go in there and change your password to a strong password. Even with the breach, only the only people that were really at risk were those who use kind of a dictionary word for their password, like pencil or whatever. If you use a stronger password with upper and lowercase and numbers and special characters, you're very safe. But you may want to be aware of that.
Wow, I wonder how many people listening just went, oh, man, he knows my password. So, hopefully not.
Password or 12345.
Yeah.
You know, there's
a
few of those
Martin.
Out there.
Hitting us all.
And there's some other news about this company called Skype and this other company called Microsoft.
Yeah, this is breaking stuff. We're recording on Tuesday morning, and hot off the internet this morning is that Microsoft is actually buying Skype for $8.5 billion. So a little bit of an investment there in some technology that may be working its way into our Microsoft products. One article I read suggested that they may put it on the Kinect, which is Xbox 360 kind of technology, and people can be making Skype video calls from their televisions soon. Lots of other potential there, and I guess we'll just have to wait and see how it all unfolds, make sure it passes all the regulatory approvals that it needs. But the article I read says 600 million Skype users may turn into Microsoft customers before you know it.
So wow.
We'll see what happens with that.
All right. Let's move on to picks of the week, Sally.
And today I'm going to point people to the Khan Academy. I'm not sure if I've ever had Khan Academy as my pick.
I don't think so.
Khan Academy is basically the efforts of one man, Salman Khan, who started doing videos for his nephews to help them long distance with their algebra class. And it turned out that other people started watching and appreciating what he was doing. And now he has a library of over 2,100 educational videos. They cover math, science, history and finance, and test preparation as well. So if you have a student who needs some extra assistance with their math or science coursework, this may be a great resource for you to take advantage of. Salman Khan was recently a TED Talk featured commentator, and his TED Talk is available as well, and I'd encourage you to spend 20 minutes catching his vision and understanding where he's coming from and where he hopes this will develop further. So he's moving into online drills and self-paced exercises, and the whole concept is people can watch these at their leisure. They can watch them over and over again to get the concepts, and then they can drill over and over again on things that they may need additional assistance with. So an excellent website and just a really impressive collection that he's put together there.
Mm-hmm. Good pick. I was not aware of that, and that's a great resource.
Yeah, it is. But you have to watch some of his videos.
Yeah.
He's really good at what he does. You can learn calculus there.
Brush up on my calculus. Yeah.
There you go.
My pick is a hardware pick. It is actually also related to security, and it is a lock for your computer. Not a software lock, but a cable lock. Kensington has had these for a long time. It's a Kensington combination computer lock. Actually, the one I'm going to recommend is the CombiSaver Master Coded Combination Notebook Lock. Very catchy title, Sally.
Mm-hmm. Short and sweet.
They sell for about $35 through Tech Depot, which is a Shopwell's partner, so you could get a good price. I think it's even less than that through Shopwell's. Essentially, the way it works is it's a long cable that has a loop on it. You loop it through something stationary on one end, a desk or some other thing that's not going to be very movable if somebody wants to steal it. And then on the other end, it has a little key. It looks like a little T that you plug into your computer. And most notebook laptops have this Kensington keyhole. You plug it in, you turn it, and then you flip the combination around, and it sticks. And it's very secure. It's about a 6-foot cable, I believe. And yeah, you can cut it with cable cutters if somebody was going to go to that great length to steal your laptop. But one of the greatest security breaches there are stolen equipment. It's not just hackers coming in from the outside. It's people physically taking your computer. So if you do any kind of traveling, or if you really ever leave your computer unattended, and that goes for even in classrooms and so on and so forth, probably not a bad idea to have this kind of computer lock attached to your notebook, and then wrap it around the desk or whatever, so that somebody cannot just walk off with that expensive equipment, not just the equipment itself, but also the data that might be on it.
Yeah, I think this kind of tool is going to become more and more prevalent. It's just the investments that we make in this equipment are just too much to let them walk away. But it is hard to carry that laptop with you everywhere you go.
Right.
So
we lock up our bikes, but we just leave our computers on our desks.
So
it's an important security measure.
Great pick.
I want to remind our listeners about our upcoming live streaming events. I am traveling up to your neck of the woods, Sally, going up to New Ulm on Friday to do some setup, and then on Saturday we'll be streaming all the festivities from Martin Luther College, and that is the graduation or commencement service and the call service. And I think the commencement service is at 10 and the call service is at 2:30, I want to say. So if you go to streams, so if you just go to the Wells website, wells.net/streams/live, you'll get the link there to watch everything online. I think MLC is actually doing their own streaming for the commencement concert, which
that's
is the
Friday
evening
night?
Before, right? Mm-hmm. That's on Friday. I don't know the exact time. I'm assuming it's 7 or 8 o'clock. So check their website for that information.
And as if that wasn't enough excitement, then you'll be covering the Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary events as well.
The following week, right?
Vicar assignment will be next Tuesday night, May 17th at 7 p.m. There'll be a graduation call service and concert and graduation service following later in that week. Mm-hmm. And all of that is online. You can check out the schedule on our streams website.
Yep. Of interest this coming up, Sally, we shouldn't forget about the training that you and I are doing.
That's right. We're gearing up for Final Web for Teachers and Final Web for Dummies. These classes will be held at Martin Luther College in toward the end of June, and then again in Milwaukee at the beginning of August. So if you're looking for some face-to-face Final Web training, then you'll want to check these out. The links are bit.ly/FW for teachers and bit.ly/FW for dummies, and we'll have those links included in our show notes.
Yep. There are some new features within the Final Web product that I'm kind of excited about that we'll be reviewing there as well. So they've made some nice improvements.
One thing you can be sure of with technology is it's going to change.
Yeah,
so,
yep.
You'll want to take advantage of all that good stuff going on with the Final Web product.
And spread the word on that, too. Mm-hmm. Community feedback.
We heard from several people this week, starting with a friend of mine, Joanne Nimmers, who's down at Atonement in Plano, Texas, and serves as the school secretary for Calvary in Dallas, Texas. And Joanne actually joined us on the podcast several months ago. And one thing she mentioned then, and she wrote to me about again this week, was the fact that they would really like some good software for their after-school program, keeping up with all the signing in and signing out and billing issues associated with an after-school program can be quite time-consuming and kind of hairy. So she wondered if we had any more suggestions, and I guess we'll just kind of put it out to our listeners. If there is anything that you'd like to recommend to Joanne and the folks down at Calvary, we'd love to hear from you. The best I could offer is that we heard from Dan Scheffel at St. Paul's in Appleton, and he uses a piece of open source software, PHP Time Clock, and we'll include a link to that in the show notes. He uses that for his staff timekeeping, but it sounded like it was open source and adaptable, that might very well work as something for the sign-in, sign-out kind of timekeeping with the parents as well. So I recommended that she check that out, but if there are others in the audience that have recommendations, we'd love to hear about it.
Yep, please do.
Next up, we heard from our friend Jonathan Favorite.
Right.
Jonathan is a staff minister at Crosswalk in Phoenix, Arizona.
He was on the show not too long ago, and also the host of the Staff Minister Conference that both you and I attended last weekend.
Right. And our last show was a recap of that Staff Minister Conference, so he made a special effort to listen to that episode and wrote to thank us for that and for our participation in the conference that was held at MLC. Yep. And then he shared a couple of different ideas for us. For the podcast, and we always like to hear from you and hear what you think would be special or appropriate to include in the podcast. And one thing he suggested was that the podcast has a lot of information in it that everybody may not be absorbing completely. And maybe parsing it out in smaller pieces might be a good way to do it. He suggested we check out Lifehacker and their strategy, where they put out small, short pieces of information. And we certainly will take those suggestions into account and try to accommodate that kind of need from our listeners.
Absolutely. Yep. Thank you for listening, and thank you for the feedback. And probably now is a good time to make sure everybody knows how to give us feedback. And obviously the website, the show notes page is one way, wellstech.wells.net, or email address wellstech@wells.net. But we do have a voicemail line, probably little known and little used, but it is available, 405-4-WELLS. That's 405-367-9357 is our Google voicemail address. If you want to share something on Twitter, and we do get quite a bit of that, just #WellsTech, your tweet, and we will notice that and mention it on the show. Of course, we're on Facebook. Many of you, I think, have joined us there, facebook.com/WellsTech. We have a WellsTech Digo group and also the listserv. If you go to the website, you'll find out how to contribute to that. And both Sally and I are on these social networks as well. I am M. Spriggs on Twitter, and Sally is WellsTech Trainer on Twitter.
That's me. Yeah, we'd love to follow you. So if you follow us, we can be aware of your Twitter accounts too. So
absolutely.
Join us
there.
There
were a couple more pieces of feedback. I shared a couple things on Facebook. One that I thought was really an interesting project being done by Concordia Publishing House called Echoes of the Hammer. If anybody's familiar with graphic novels, basically they're adult comic books. And the topic of this particular graphic novel, Echoes of the Hammer, as you might guess, is Martin Luther. And it goes through the life of Luther in graphic novel style. And looks really, to me, there's just a quick teaser in that. We'll put that link in the show notes. But looks really interesting, and I'm going to grab it when it comes out. It's not quite out yet, at least I don't think it is. But it looks like it's really well done.
Yep, graphic novels are all the rage with, like, the teen crowd these days. So maybe they're going to appeal to a different readership.
I think that's the intent with this, yeah.
That's pretty cool stuff. So we also heard from Jason Schmidt, who's at Gethsemane in Omaha, Nebraska, and he shared a link to the Haiku LMS, or Learning Management System. And it looks to be kind of a parallel to Schoology or something along those lines. It's a free setup, and you can actually host courses and interact with your students online through your Haiku class, basically. So if you're looking to do some testing, this might be a good one to check out.
Yep. And Sal, you shared some stuff via Digo.
I did. A couple of links that I thought were interesting. One was just an article from the Table Project where they're encouraging the sharing app that they have available in the Table Project. And I thought it was a really interesting article where they talk about how much stuff we own and how the size of our houses has more than doubled in the last 40 years, but our family size has decreased. And still we pay for millions of dollars of storage units to store all our stuff away from our house. So interesting perspective there, and I thought maybe some food for thought even for pastors for Bible class or whatever as we talk about materialism and idolatry in today's world. So just an interesting read I thought you'd enjoy.
Yep.
Next up, I wanted to share a link from David Warlick, who's a ed tech kind of guru guy, and he started a new website, Infographic a Day, geared toward educators and sharing infographics that are available on the web and sharing ideas for how they might be useful in the classroom. Mm-hmm. And he's put together a really great collection of infographics there, and apparently he's adding to it each day, or each weekday at least. And so educators may want to tag this and use it as a resource.
I think infographics are really a growing trend in almost every area, in business and in education, and maybe even ministry, where if you haven't seen them, they're essentially data with pictures. And it's a kind of a visually appealing kind of a chart that'll show different data points mapped against, you know, different concepts, and brings all the stuff you need to know about a particular topic together into almost like a poster. You know, maybe that's the best way to describe it, where if you were to print this thing out, it would be like an 11 by 17 image that would show you all kinds of data about a particular topic. So I'm interested to see where this project goes.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of those infographics. Many times you can easily embed them in your own website and make your mm-hmm. own commentary on them. And, you know, it just kind of harkens back to one of our more recent book studies where we talked about the hidden value of electronic media mm-hmm. and how everything is moving to more graphic displays
right.
instead of words. We're more into pictures these days, and pictures have more meaning for how we understand things. And I think this is a good example.
Yeah, I was thinking that, and I've seen this actually done, the annual report that every church produces, which is probably one of the most driest, you know, documents that the church probably does produce, I saw an example. I don't think this was one of our Wells churches, but it was another church that actually kind of took this infographic approach and made it into, a 8-page an 8-page annual report, but use these kind of infographic-y images to share average attendance and number of calls made by the pastor and people, in, you know, number of people in Bible study topics, you know, those kinds of things. It was really well done, and really wanted encouraged you or enticed you to actually read the report, which is the whole point, right? So it takes a lot more work, but I think it was a great concept.
That sounds really interesting, Martin. We may have to spice up our annual reports.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
One last link I wanted to share. This is just a video I came across that I thought was interesting and compelling. It's a gospel confession, basically, presentation of the gospel message, but in video format and very trendy graphics and things associated with it. So I won't do a whole lot better job of describing it, but I encourage you to go and watch. Perhaps it's something you could share on a Facebook page and spark some discussion within your congregation or something along those lines. Maybe a pastor would want to use it with a youth group or a Bible class setting or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Just a interesting video, so check
right.
it out.
Okay. Well, that will about do it for community feedback and about do it for the show. Sally, I'm excited about next week's show. We decided that with all the Apple stuff in our lives, you're getting some new Apple technology in your household at some point, right?
Hopefully this week, yes. An iPad is on the way.
On the way.
Shipped from China yesterday.
That's right. and I mentioned that recently I had procured a MacBook Air to do some of this iPhone programming. And we're going to do an all Mac show. So all things Mac. Not that you PC users will be left out, because we'll talk about, I think, topics that will cross the border, so to speak. But we'll have two, one former Apple employee and one current Apple employee on the show with us to talk about all things It should be all things Apple, I suppose, not just
there
all
you
things
go.
Mac. hardware, software, devices, the whole Apple ecosystem, especially how does that relate to ministry? Is there a place for some of these products within ministry? I think the answer is yes, but let's talk to the experts and find that out. So that is next week, so I'm looking forward to that.
Most definitely.
Let's close the show with the music of Kevin Lersch, Children of the Heavenly Father, from his album Abide With Me. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We really appreciate you tuning in each week and hope to talk to you next week.
Such a refuge there was given.